Is mic on?
Episode 112, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? This is so surreal. My guest today, I did his late night talk show several times.
Right.
And now he's in my Shasta doing my podcast. I'm thrilled. I'm honored.
Oh, it's amazing how much you've fallen. One day you're on top, next day you're in a trailer in the hills.
I'm blown away that you're here. My guest is Jay Leno.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming up, Jay.
Yeah, no problem.
Let me ask you.
Sure.
Because I was thinking, I want to have a discussion with you.
All right.
If we didn't talk about comedy or cars today, what would we talk about?
Whatever you want. Ask me whatever you want.
Well, what other interests do you have, I guess?
Not a whole lot. You know what it is? I'm one of those people, like now, when I watch the news, I have to watch. In the old days, I could watch news, like you'd watch Walter Cronkite, and there'd be stories I wasn't interested in and stories I was interested in, but I would learn something from the stories I'm not interested in. Now you have to watch MSNBC if you're liberal, Fox if you're conservative, and you get no diverse opinion. You only get the news that suits you. And I find that very disturbing. I like to just, I didn't know that. That's interesting. You know, like on both sides of issues, for example, I've never seen, a lot of times you'll watch one of the conservative channels and it'll be a pro-gun story, like a story about a guy breaks in, attacking a mother, 11 or 12-year-old kid takes a gun, shoots the criminal.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't hear that. Or you hear a truncated version. On the conservative station, oh, the kid's a hero. Boy. On the other side, you know, somebody with a gun does a shooting and so on. And then on the conservative side, it's brushing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, can I just get the facts, please?
Yeah. And that's changed a lot.
Well, that has changed a lot because people just watch the news and information that they already know the answer to. It's like people only want to answer questions they know the answer to, and you don't learn anything
from
that.
So do you find yourself watching one of those networks more than the other?
No, I just like to go around and just see what the story is. Sometimes I go, I wonder what Fox's take on this story is. Oh, and then I learn why Trump supporters believe this and other supporters believe that, you know. I find it fascinating.
Does the state of the world depress you like it depresses me?
No, it doesn't depress me.
Really?
It doesn't depress me at all because things that used to be the law are now against the law. Like when I was a kid, segregation, all that kind of stuff. Well, that was the law. You could, yes, of course you have separate bathrooms for a quote what they call colored people. That seemed perfectly normal in 62 and 63 in the South. And then the law changed, and now it's against the law. You know, I think the world is actually in some ways a better place because everything is, frankly, when I was a kid, you know, I'd say, don't take candy from strangers. Don't, what? There were no child molesters. You just didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
Like in Boston growing up, a woman in the Globe was never raped, they were accosted, which could be anything from, hey, beautiful, to, you know, actual physical assault with a broken bottle, you know. Now you get the facts. I mean, the story that always makes me laugh every year is shark attacks are up 100% in beaches around the world. All right, last year there were 6 shark attacks. This year there are 12.
Doesn't take much to
right,
go.
Yeah, okay, but that is 100%, right. But it's not the, oh my, get the kids out of the pool, honey. Sharks, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that, it is since, you know, I think once news became a viable means of income, like the news used, like Walter Cronkite, Huntley Brinkley, they were never rated. It was just, what do they call it? Whether you write it off as a public service, you did news, and then you made your money from it. 60 Minutes is a show that really changed all that. 60 Minutes said, hey, wait a minute, we can take news stories, which are essentially free, and make a huge profit if we make it interesting enough or sensational, whatever you want to call it. I'm not saying it's a bad program. It's a very good program. But what I mean is, but now the news, so for a whole hour, you can make money with news and actually beat, you know, Magnum PI or what other shows were on at the time.
Yeah. And the other thing is you would tune in once a day for the news, right?
Yeah, and you watched every day.
5 p.m.?
Whatever it might be. You know, I have no idea who the anchors are anymore because you watch Dan Rather or Chet Huntley or whoever it might be, you know.
That's the cleaning. This is the ambiance of this Shasta is that street cleaning. We're the gardeners. What other podcast do you come off and you have to meet the gardeners? And
actually, all of them.
I want to discuss two stories about the Tonight Show.
All right, go ahead.
One being mine, one being yours. Do you want to start with? And
I don't care. Ask me whatever you want. What's the question?
And for the listeners and the viewers, I want you to know you want to stick around at the end because I have a new game show I've invented just for you.
Oh,
Crash Test Lenny, or Leno. I haven't decided which is better. Instead of Crash Test Dummy,
right?
And I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I will be blown away if you can figure this out.
Oh, I got to run. Jesus. Well, go ahead.
I think you're one of few people in the world that could perhaps win this game.
All right.
I think it would be a fascinating game. But I'll discuss. I guess I consider you a friend. I consider you somebody very supportive.
Well, I think you're a great comic. I enjoy your work very much.
But I mean, of comedians in general, I hear that you watch specials and then you'll call a comedian and tell them what you think of it. And
well, I if I don't like it, I don't do that.
Right.
Just if I think, you know, because I see, you know, every now and then I like to watch this dry bar comedy because it's pure, clean comedy. I have nothing against working dirty. It's fine. But it's just when the punchline is an obscenity, well, that's not really a joke.
Right.
So when I watch that, I go, first of all, it's people I've never seen or heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Doing clever material that has to meet a certain standard, you know? You know, it's so funny because people don't realize, you know, free speech, man. I said, it is so much better than it used to be. Do you know what a cabaret card is?
No.
Okay. In the 60s, Lenny Bruce, all these comedians, when you worked in New York City, you had a cabaret card, which was a license to perform. A license to be an entertainer. And if you got up on stage and started spouting obscenities or sexual or whatever it might be, a policeman could tear up your cabaret card and you didn't work again.
Really?
Yeah, you just didn't work.
Did you have a cabaret card?
No, because that's like 5 years before me. You know, I think in the late 60s, it was the Warren Court. The Supreme Court made everything legal.
Mm-hmm.
Obscenity, pornography, because it used to be if it breached the moral standard of the community, you know, all those kind of things.
Right.
And it's much better, but you get the good with the bad. That's the trouble with it. But that's what Lenny, I mean, I think Lenny Bruce was doing a bit about who'd you rather have sex with, Kate Smith, who was a enormous woman who used to sing the national anthem all the time, or Lena Horne, who was black. Kate Smith was white. He was talking about interracial. Pull your cabaret card, you know. That's what used to happen.
Right.
You got arrested for that.
Wow.
You know, so things are actually much, much better. I mean, you really think now is as bad as World War II? I mean, when we were under attack and the world could have gone in either direction, it's not nearly as scary as it. Well, it's still scary. I don't mean it's not scary. Obviously, it is for me because I'm not stupid. I'm not to think I'm a privileged person, and I lead a pretty good life, and it's fine. So I'm seeing it through rose-colored glasses. But for the most part, I guess the thing that sums it up is what used to be the law is now against the law, and I think that's good. You still have to fight to get what you want, but at least you've got the law on your side. I mean, if you were a black person, a white person testified against you 50 years ago, you were done. I mean, the women, that man raped me because they didn't want their family to know they're having sex with a black guy. Oh, and that guy will go to jail for the rest of his life. I mean, does it still happen? Yes, I'm not naive, but at least you have a fighting chance.
Hmm. Well, let's go back to dry bar comedy.
All right.
Because it feels like your generation, we're different generations as comedians, was very caught up in it has to be clean.
Well, you couldn't get on TV unless it was clean. I mean, that's just the way it used to be. Plus, there's a certain laziness, I think, to working blue. You know, when I started doing Letterman was the first show for me where I could really be me. Because, you know, I go on Johnny Carson, I go, thank you, Mr. Carson. Hey, it's Johnny. I, you know, we grew up in New England. You don't, You don't call your parents, hey, this is my parents, Bob and Agnes. Well, how are you, Mr. and Mrs. Manicelli? Nice to meet you. And I'm not going to call your mom Agnes or your dad Bob, you know, even if we're the same age. Yeah. How are you, Mrs. Hanson? You know, it's just that thing. So with Letterman, that was the first time we go, like, Dave, nice tie, you know, and I could make fun. I couldn't say that to Johnny Carson. Oh, my God, I'd be a rude person, you know.
Like, right.
But, yeah, so.
Rickles got away with it, right?
Oh, yeah, well, Rickles, yeah. Well, he, the great rule of comedy is you can get away with anything if it's really funny. It just has to be really funny. That's the thing that hurt Michael Richards. You know, Michael Richards, when he had his whole incident, The Last Factor, you know what I'm referring to.
Of course.
Okay. He is a physical comedian, not a, he's not a wordsmith like Letterman or Seinfeld or any of these guys. So consequently, he, if he had done something in a physical way, that was racial, because people, oh, yeah, black guys do that. That makes me laugh. That, it would have been really funny. But instead, he said inappropriate things, thinking it would shock. And it, well, you saw what happened to his career. That was pretty much a sad thing. Do I think he's racist? No. Do I think he made a terrible mistake? Yeah. But I love the guy. And I still think he's funny. He's still my friend. But I could see that's what was wrong. You know, I remember there was a Saturday Night Live sketch, which they wanted to take off the air. Do you remember Spider Savage? I think he was a skier. I'm trying to remember. I think he got shot or somebody shot him, whatever it was. But Saturday Night Live had skiers coming down a hill, and you hear, and when they fall, it was as if they were being shot. So it was like just skiers constantly being shot coming down. And it was hugely funny. But it didn't make fun of that incident, but they kept it in because it was really funny.
Right.
And that's the key. So when I would do Letterman in a club where I might have an obscenity, I would go, Dave, you know, go to the circus, and you got these syphilitic clowns throwing anthrax spores at the children, and, you know, Letterman would go, syphilitic clowns? Oh, Dave, it's a horrible thing. And it just, because syphilitic was funnier than the obscenity.
Right.
And that was always the thing to me. Try and come up with a real word that conveys what you're saying. I'm not saying that it can't be effective. I remember Bill Cosby, when he was still the guy we all knew, he didn't swear either, but he had a whole bit about a little old lady playing a slot machine, you know, and this, and in the end she goes, shit. And it got a huge laugh.
Because he broke that.
Yeah, but he said it, you know, he was the old lady saying it, and it was funny coming to it. Yeah, so to me, because eventually obscenity loses its shock value and it doesn't have any worth after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I use it occasionally. Look, I'm not some moral guy. I'm just talking about if you want to make a living in this business, you know, it's funny. When you're 28 years old, like you're Matt Rife, like a young guy, handsome, cute, you know, you say the word pussy, people laugh. Oh, cute guys. When you're 61 years old, you're on stage and you say the word, ooh, that creepy old, ooh, you're the creepy old guy. You know what I'm saying? So you have to kind of grow into your act.
And you always said that. You said that to me at one point when I was doing a joke. You said your jokes are growing with you, with your age. You're not stuck there.
Right.
But, you know, the models change now. Like when I did The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And I did Letterman in the same year, it was triumphant. It was the biggest thing. If I was at the clubs and I said, I could walk in, I say, I'm doing The Tonight Show tomorrow night. Can I run 5 minutes? They'd stop everything.
Right, yeah.
It was, and you needed The Tonight Show. You needed the networks. Right. You couldn't be crass or blue. Now, it's very anti-network. It's very do-it-yourself, like what I'm doing right now.
Right.
I'm doing my own talk show in a Shasta trailer in the back of my yard, and I'm getting guests like you, which is amazing.
So essentially, it's the same thing, just a different format.
But now it seems like it's swung the other way with crudeness or just...
Well, again, I'm not talking against crudeness. It can be very funny. It's just you can't... If you want to make money doing this, like corporate pays 10 times whatever your salary is, and all they ask, could you just be clean? That's all we ask.
We're talking about corporate shows.
Corporate shows,
which you and I, you do a ton of. I do as many as I can get.
I like doing them. And it's, you know, it's one time I booked myself into Oral Roberts University just to see if I could play, because that was Jerry Falwell and all those kind of things, you know. And they said, could you not do any obscenities? Or okay. I didn't. I did politics. Same laughs. They just didn't want to hear X. Okay. Right. Well, that's all right. I mean, I always love these comedians going. I went down there and they told me not to swear. I got up there, man. I tore into those people. They pulled me off stage after half an hour. I was, okay, so you don't work there again. You don't get asked back.
Nobody, and they'll never use a comedian again.
And nobody really laughs. So what did you accomplish? But somehow that's some brave, you know.
Yeah.
I don't get
it. I always say, when I do corporates, you're paying me to make sure nobody gets fired.
Yeah.
The person that hires you doesn't get fired.
Right.
The HR people don't get fired. But do you? Yeah. Sure.
But then you're deemed, oh, you're a sellout. You're not. Yeah, fine.
It's a lot of money. It's good money to sell out for.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you have any relationship with Letterman anymore?
Yeah, look, I love Dave. It makes me laugh. Made me laugh then. Makes me laugh now. You know, like I always say, people when they come after you, who do you tackle in sports? The guy with the football, okay? And the Tonight Show was the football. You know, it was actually very good because Letterman got the critics and I got the populace. And we each walked away very rich and, at least for me, very happy. And it was fine. And I would have switched with that. After 5 years, hey, Jay, now you're the hip guy and Dave's the popular one. Well, that's fine too. That would be okay if that was the case.
Yeah.
So no, I always thought Dave was funny. You know, it's not like we have a lot of interests, but when you're a comedian, especially when I started out, I never met another comedian. I would travel hundreds of miles to see comedians like from the Catskills I never heard of open just to. Meet another comedian and say, you know.
There weren't comedy clubs. You were playing
strip clubs. No, there were no comedy clubs.
You created your own.
I remember my mother on the phone talking to my Aunt Nettie. And I heard her go, my Aunt Nettie asked, what's Jay doing now? Well, he has a little skit that he puts on from town to town.
Skit.
Yeah, that's, yeah. And I go,
it's the worst thing you can say to a comedian.
Yeah,
nice little skit.
Yeah, it's not a skit. It's like, well, no, Ma, it's not, you know. Like, I remember my mother said, you know, why don't you once do it for the family? And son, I promise no one will laugh at you. I go, Mom, that's the idea. Well, you're supposed to laugh. Yeah, it didn't get it.
What level of success did your parents see you achieve?
Well, I got the Tonight Show.
But the permanent host?
When I was the host, yeah.
Wow.
I remember when I played Carnegie Hall, I brought my parents in. My mother go, why would you be at Carnegie Hall? I don't understand. I thought that's where people play instruments. No, Mom, they have come in. Well, all right. So, Connie Connell, and I see my parents 5 rows back, center seats. I can see them from the stage.
Uh-oh.
And this is when I was doing Letterman like every month, and it was when things are really wrong. And we sell it out, and there are about 10 or 15 college kids in the row behind my parents. And I was doing routines I'd done, so they were kind of laughing along with it. And these guys are really laughing. I see my mother turn around and go, shh. I go, Ma, stop the show. Ma, you know, and of course my mother, oh! My mother is nothing worse than being singled out. My mother thought from a crowd. She thought that was the most horrible thing, most embarrassing. You know, when I was a kid, I remember being like 6 and 7. We'd go to the store and I'd run away from my mom and I'd go up to the manager or something. I go, could you page Mrs. Leno? I can't find my mom. We're to Mrs. Catherine Leno, please. Oh! My mother hearing her name over the internet. Oh my God, that was the most embarrassing thing to her. Just never, just to be singled out. And my mother once had a time says to me, you know, no one wants someone who's funny all the time. You should sing a little song, maybe do a little dance, and then you tell a joke. I go, no, your mom, it really doesn't work that way.
Who did your parents laugh at?
My mother liked Alan King and... My mother would go, oh, that's so stupid. You know, that was her reaction to everything that was funny. Oh, that's so stupid. We like comedy. I mean, you know, my parents were supportive. They didn't really understand it, but it was great.
Can we talk Alan King for a second?
I love Alan King. Alan King, I thought, was one of the great comics.
Without a doubt.
Never sit down in a wardrobe. That was his thing. You go backstage, you see him. It's like an hour before the show and he's standing up. And I go, Alan, sit down. No, you know, you never sit down in wardrobe.
In wardrobe.
You know, because you're on stage.
Well, you guys used to wear suits. We're like black t-shirts.
Well, remember, back in the 50s and early 60s, this is before even had what they call scale. You know, when you did a talk show, you get scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Alan King was getting $12,500 an appearance to be on Ed Sullivan. That's 5 minutes or 7 minutes on
Ed. That's a lot of money.
And so that's probably $150,000 now, I think. I think it's fair to say easily 10 times.
Wow.
I mean, you could get a Ferrari for $11,000.
Yeah.
You know? So he's getting $12,500, which is, I think, more than anybody else. He was one of the highest paid people. And then they started to think, well, with the talk shows, Steve Allen couldn't afford to pay that on his late night talk show. So they instituted scale, which meant when you went on a talk show, you weren't really performing. You were just promoting.
Mm-hmm.
And if singing a song promoted it, well, that's promotion.
Right.
It's not a performance. Right. So you didn't get the big money.
Yeah. Yeah. He has that bit, Alan King, survived.
By his wife. Yeah. Hilarious bit. If people don't remember that. He would take out a piece of paper and read, you know, like, this guy died at 103. Survived by his wife!
You know? It would build.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a clip on YouTube. I tell everybody, you want to see
yeah.
a master
yeah,
at
great.
Comedy.
Right.
This guy would start, his voice is low. He goes, well, read this. And he goes, well, survive. And he'd let the person finish. And then little by little, he goes, what is it? Survive! He would cut them off. He'd get and then the last one, you know, is... a wife so distraught that her husband is leaving him, throws herself out of the window, lands on the husband.
Right, right.
Oh, and he dies, you know.
Yeah.
So, and these are real stories.
Right, right,
There was a war, a guy who fought in two wars.
Right. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, he was really funny.
And he worked that crowd. And that's like, do you believe, like some of your contemporaries, that there are very few true comedic minds out there?
No, I think there are a lot of comedic minds out there. You know, I don't judge it that way. You know, one of the great joys of my life, and I'm not that close with him, is seeing Larry David happy. Because when I was a young adult, working Catch a Rising Star, Larry would come in, and we were all traditional stand-ups. And you know his sense of humor. He was not well-known, and he couldn't get it across. I mean, as comedians, we'd be shrieking with laughter, but it would be a little, oh, that's a little mean. Oh, the audience, I don't know. It just, you know, so he would always be, always seem frustrated and angry. So it gives me great joy to see him be as successful.
What makes Larry David happy?
Well, I don't know. But what I mean is, I see the joy. When I watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, he's having a good time. He's enjoying himself.
Was that a guy that you looked at and said, this is going to be the guy that makes it?
You know, I never tried. I knew Andy Kaufman from almost the first day. And I used to feel sorry for him because I go, this guy's so weird. He's not really... He went to a college. I used to give him rides to Boston. That's in New York. I would drive to the Improv like four nights a week. And I gave him a ride a couple of times. And, oh, I'm going to sing like Elvis Presley. You know, and I go, oh, okay. And he would sing the song. And I go, I guess it's funny. It doesn't seem like it would hold a crowd. And then, of course, he turns out to be a huge star, bigger than any of us at the time. And so I do it this way because I think that's the way you do it. And I've been successful and it works for me. And it has been for many other people. But, you know, when Rodney Dangerfield, Rodney's a classic guy that had to grow into his face because he was a young comic. And it wasn't until he became a middle-aged man, I got no respect, that he looked the part, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when Rodney used to do bits, not just jokes. He had a comedy album out early on, and he had a funny bit I thought about. He goes, this is your pilot, so-and-so. We're flying over the Grand Canyon. If you look to the right side of the plane, you see the remnants of Flight 416 that hit a mountain. Bob, you were with me on that one, weren't you? You know, that always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
You throw that line out in the middle. But it wasn't Rodney. Oh, I tell you, no. It was a different Rodney.
What was the switch in his career? Do you know?
Get no respect, you know. No respect at all.
Was that in the movie or was that just...
No, that, I don't know if that came... Do you know who Joe Ansis is?
No.
Joe Ansis was a muse for comedians. If people know what a muse is, it's someone who inspires you. Mm. He was like the funniest guy who was afraid to get on stage. So he would sit and do table comedy with Lenny Bruce and Rodney and all the comics of the day. And he was like, and guys would go, hey, Joe, can I have that? Yeah, okay. Can I do it? And I don't know if he was responsible for No Respect. I'm not going to give him. I think he helped Rodney nurture that.
It's interesting when a comedian finds that voice, like Larry the Cable Guy, who was just out there, a headliner, and all of a sudden he comes up with this get her done.
It's interesting. I have a friend, Matt Berry. Matt Berry was a comedian 40 years ago. I met him in Denver. He comes to L.A., becomes a writer, a huge writer on Tim Allen and Last Man Standing, and, wealthy. Okay, then I ran into him a couple months ago. And he's doing comedy, stand-up again. And I took him aside and I said, you know, what you're doing is okay, but you're an old guy now, and you're talking about old guy things, you know, Depends and grandchildren not being able to get up. And I said, every old guy does that. You know, you're an old guy who was a producer. Because when you go on stage, people go, here's a guy in his 60s. Doing comedy, I've never heard of him. He must be terrible. Mm-hmm. So right away, they assume you're not, you know. So I said, well, why don't you talk about being a producer? Well, he was on Roseanne, too. It's got to be stories about working with Roseanne, whatever. And I just kind of helped him find his voice. And now he's working a lot. He's having a great time.
Not really.
But he talks about who he is and what he did. I mean, he can still throw in the grandchildren jokes and a few of the old things. But it's not the crux of your act. It's not the whole...
And where's he playing? What type of venues?
No, just the clubs around town. Yeah. He's not trying to get to be famous, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Carol Leifer. You know Carol, great comedian, writer on Seinfeld, and you know a lot of people thought she was the inspiration for Elaine and all that kind of stuff. And she would get on stage. I said, when they introduce you, have them say, former writer on Seinfeld, and you know other credits like that. And then she walked on stage, the audience, they were listening right from the get-go. Because, as a comic, you always get, it took me 5 minutes, but I got him. It took me 20 minutes before I got him. Or I never got him. But there's always a time when you're unknown, when you didn't have him, and you had to win him over.
Or if you're famous, you have 5 minutes, you get him, and then you lose him if you don't have the goods.
Yeah, but with Carol, it was the same thing. I said, have him say in your intro, you have very impressive credits, Carol. Just have him give the executive producer of this, you know. And, since you walked on stage, you heard, shh. And
then people, was that your mom?
No. But people listening from the get-go, she's the one? That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So.
Do you remember life before you were Jay Leno?
I think it's been pretty much the same. Of course I do. I mean, I still live like that, you know? I still live like I'm not broke, but like I travel alone. I don't travel with a road manager or anything because nothing funny happens when you do that.
Take me through that. You have a gig, you jump on a plane?
Yeah.
Private?
Usually. I fly private now because you can't get... You know, in the 80s, I was like the third most frequent flyer in the United States. And I would say... In that whole 3 or 4 year period, maybe late 40 minutes to an hour at the most, but really never missed a connecting flight or anything like that.
Right.
Now it's awful. Now it leaves the gate and you sit out on the runway so you can call it on time to depart. I mean, I used to be able to get up at like 5:30 in California, go to the airport, get a 7 or 8 o'clock flight to New York, land at 4:30, go to the hotel, be on stage at 8 or 9. Could never do that today because there's just no chance that the plane will get there on
time. Can't even get to LAX.
Well,
that's exhausting.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just a different world now.
So you get on a plane, you're all alone.
Yeah.
You don't bring a friend. You don't want.
No.
Do you get lonely?
No, I don't get lonely. No. I enjoy my own company. I'm very I like to read or something like that.
What is that? Like, when I think about you and cars, because I'm not a car guy at all.
Well, here's the thing. We're in a subjective business. Some people think you're funny. Some people think you suck. And they're both right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I never believe the good stuff or the bad stuff. I just, thank you. Oh, well, that's right. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry you didn't like it, sir. You know, I don't put, oh, my God, that guy said I was the best. No, you're not going to be the best because it's subjective. But when you have something that's, when you have a car that's not running, and you work on, and now it's running, no one can say it's not running.
It's mathematical.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it, you know.
Do cars give you something that people can't? Is it that? Is it this dependency? Is it?
Well, I enjoy it. I it's something I like to do. I like the idea of doing two things at once. Like, to me, eating in a moving car. Ah, that's like the greatest thing. Uh-huh. You know, because, oh, I'm getting somewhere. Oh, I'm getting something to eat too, you know. Like eating on a plane. Oh, well, you know, I like to feel like I'm accomplishing something.
Yeah.
I'm not a vacation guy. I get no joy from, you know, there's an ad on TV now. I don't know what it's for. It says, when you die, what are you going to think about? What you could have bought or where you could have gone? And then they show the guy at Mount Machu Picchu, whatever it is.
Machu Picchu.
Machu Picchu, whatever that guy. But I'm thinking, oh, yeah, what I would have, I missed out on that Corvette back in so and so. When I should have bought. I missed the whole point of the ad. I forget everything. My wife insists we went to the Eiffel Tower. I go, honey, I have no memory of that. She goes, don't you remember? No. To me, you know, going to Europe is like a bad day at Disneyland. Oh, look at that thatched roof. Isn't that something? Okay.
You don't vacation, right?
No, I never vacation.
You don't. So all this money, what is it good for anything? Everybody wants money.
Surprisingly. You know, I don't think money makes you happier. It just accentuates what you are. If you're a prick, it makes you a bigger prick. If you're a nice person, it makes you a nicer person. I mean, I was in New England doing a show, and this kid came to see me. You know, okay, nice kid, and I came back in town. He all can I bring my grandpa to see. Okay, the grandpa's like my age. Okay, so I'm talking to him. I said, so what are you doing? I get out of high school. I want to go to college. Where are we going to go? Well, I want to go to UMass, but UMass is like 28,000 or 30,000 a year. So, oh, okay. You know, so he's going to go to some community college. So I thought, you know, this kid seems to have something on the ball. So I called his mom and I talked to her and I said, listen, I'll pay for his college education.
Oh.
Take a chance. Oh, okay. So I pay the first year, you know. Calls me at the end of the first year. Miss Leno, thank you so much. Yeah, no problem. And he says, you know, thanks to this guy. I worked real hard. I got a scholarship. I don't need your money anymore. So I just want to say thank you.
Wow.
And I went, oh, because I was prepared to do the whole 4 years. You know, just,
it's generous.
And I went, oh, okay. I mean, here's where cause and effect is something. You know, I mean, I saw something in that kid. And I went, oh, I don't know what it was. It's just something I like, you know.
Where's that kid now?
Oh, he's graduated school, and I know he wants to be FBI guy, I think. So.
Really?
Yeah.
My good friend's FBI.
Oh, okay,
he's on this podcast all the time.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right, I've heard that guy,
Jim Clemente.
Yeah, that's right.
What I'm saying is I'd be happy to connect him.
But anyway, those kind of things are fun to do. The trouble with letting people know you do that type of thing, you then get the phony letters, you know. Dear Miss Leno, I'm a farmer. I've got no money. Can you help me out? And the return address, Gun Hill Road, Bronx, New York. Okay. Where is he a farmer on Gun Hill Road?
Yeah, you're at that age where you got to be careful about being scammed. You know, my parents every day forward me emails saying, is this real? Is this a scam? You know, I feel like I'm fighting Nigeria for my inheritance.
Well, that's not right. That's what it is. In show business, money is just another way to keep score, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You know, I always tell comics, this is why the job pays a lot of money. Because when you get fired, they kick you out, you have something left over. I said, if you were a nurse or a cop or a firefighter and you got fired, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because you're on a sitcom for 5 years and then they kick your ass out. So you walk away with a few million dollars. So don't bitch and moan.
Did you ever in your wildest dreams ever think you would achieve?
No. I mean, I thought, wouldn't that be cool? But no, I didn't really think. Because I'm dyslexic. I was a terrible student. It always makes me laugh because, you know, I always have a theory. I always had two jobs. I lived on one job and I banked the other job. When I worked at McDonald's, I also worked at Wilmington Ford. When I worked at McDonald's late again, I worked at Foreign Motors. So I always banquet. So when I got the Tonight Show, I said, you know, I'm not going to ever touch money from the Tonight Show. I'm just going to live on money on personal appearance because I'm a comedian and that's what I do.
Right. That's fraudulent money. Yeah. It's not real money.
It's not real money because show business either lasts your whole life or 13 weeks.
And I'm, in that sense, like when somebody sees me, I was on a show called Teen Wolf. And
right.
I love you on Teen Wolf. It's immediately, have you seen my stand-up? Like, right. I don't care. This, that's not valid, that compliment. Yeah, thanks, but.
Well, the thing is, do you know that joke about the comedian? Comedian's first time in Vegas. He's all excited. You know? And he goes to Vegas and it goes great, you know. And does the shows and goes back to his hotel room, you know. He's still wound up in the phone. And he goes, hello, you're sexy. Hi, is this the comedian? Yeah. Oh, my name's Felicity. I'm the lead dancer in the Folly Brazier show down the street. And I saw your show, and I thought you were really funny and really cute. And I don't want to be too forward, but I thought maybe you want to get together. Maybe I could come over. We could visit you in your room or something like that. Comic says, you see the first show or the second show?
You know, I still do that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I don't want to talk about somebody calling my room, but every time they're like, I saw you in Vegas last week, and I'm like, Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And so, then I scold them. I go, you never come to a late show Friday.
Yeah,
what are you thinking?
Yeah, right.
No, but we enjoyed it. I go, no, you don't understand. You would have enjoyed it more Saturday.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's just that weird time. It makes me laugh.
You know, you brought up before that comics, we can say anything as long as it's funny.
If it's funny, you're okay. It's really okay. How many inappropriate, you know, go, you know, that's awful, but that's really, you know, one of the funniest bits ever was Sam Kennison's thing about.
You live in a desert?
Live in the desert.
Live in a desert.
Yeah,
he's the greatest.
Yeah.
Stop sending money.
Yeah. I was like, it's really funny because.
This is Sam.
Yeah, but I remember the time people saying, you know, you're making fun of. Yep, I'm sorry. It's really funny.
Yeah. So. Help non-comedians understand comedians, because recently you were in a motorcycle accident and then an engine blew up in your face.
Like,
you would be disappointed if comedians didn't make jokes about that, right?
Of course. Well, also, that's the thing, like when you mentioned me and Letterman, the enemies. No, because there are only a few people like you who understand what this is. And you have a bond with that person. Whether, you know, Letterman's a big sports guy, I'm not a sports guy. We never really went to dinner or hung out or did. Even with Billy Crystal, I love Billy, and I try to support him all the time. And when he gets on, I'd like to be there. But we don't go out to dinner. Our wives don't get together. There's a bond that you have with other comedians. I mean, we're both from New England, and I sense in you the same thing when I was your age. You're in the same position. A little more wound up about it, perhaps. But
me?
But I mean, there's a bond there that I like. So we have something in common. Because when I started, like I said, I never met another comedian. I didn't know how to do it. You know, when I came to L.A., you know, I met kids who, like when they're 9, want to be lighting directors because their dad was. But nobody, you know, when you grew up in New England, you either went to college or you went to work at Tire Rubber Company in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Made sneakers or whatever it might be. The idea of going into show business. I remember Mrs. Langdell, our next door neighbor, said to my mother, you know, Jay wants to be a comedian. You know, in Hollywood, you can't be a comedian unless your father was a comedian because it's just the way it is. They don't allow it. You know, and she told me that, and I'm thinking, oh, gee, my dad's not a comedian. How am I ever going to get to be? That's what I love about show business. People have no knowledge. Feel free to give advice.
Oh, they love to give advice.
Oh, yeah.
They love to give you tags after shows.
Oh, yeah.
So what gave you this dumb idea to be a comedian then?
You know, I thought I would do it until I had to get a real job. My dad was an insurance salesman, and he became manager of the office. And in those days, it was all men. Usually Italian guys, they're very gregarious selling insurance. And to inspire the man at the monthly meetings, he would try to do something he'd never done, like juggling. The idea, you guys don't think he can sell. I think he can sell, you know. And he would juggle eggs, and the egg would hit him in the face, and the guys would laugh. And he said, but you don't see me giving up, do you? You know. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll go into insurance, because you get to do a show once a month anyway. You know.
Yeah.
So, I luckily just never had to get a regular job.
But were you were the funny kid? Did you have a good group of friends and you were the funny guy? Were
yeah,
you funny
I think
in
I,
school?
I think
Did
I was
you...
a funny guy. And to the point of where, I think this is a comic trait. For some reason, when you're a kid, you don't know why you get nicknames. Well, I got the nickname of having a hard head. I don't know why.
Hmm.
And one day, one of the guys came over with a hammer and just hit me in the head with it.
Come on, really?
And I... It really hurt. It did knock me out. But I laughed because, oh, I want to keep this. It's hard. Oh, what are you talking about? I didn't feel anything.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, because it was better to have that, you know? It's like you see comedians who, when they go on stage in their best show, they had some sort of lucky underwear. Well, they wear that every show, or lucky socks, or whatever it may be, you know? So, I think that's a comedic trait.
But did you see a comedian on TV, and you, like a Lenny Bruce, and thought, I want to be...
were comedians that looked normal but were funny. Carson, Jack Benny, Alan King. I never liked clown kind of comedy. People come out with props or funny outfit or flower that squirts water. You know, I admired what Milton Berle did, but he wasn't my kind of comic because it was, that kind of stuff.
I had Howie Mandel on a couple of episodes, and he was talking about how he felt he was never respected as a comedian, certainly by the literary world. Those were his words. And he felt like other comedians, because he was very, like, proppy like that.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing about show business. I remember Mel Gibson, before all the controversy, he had directed Braveheart, you know, huge hit, probably sexiest man in America, biggest movie star in the world at that point. And he goes, I said, I hope you win for Braveheart. You're not going to give it to me. They hate me. They don't like me. I realized, oh, okay. Everybody in show business has this. And I have it, but to a lesser degree. It just never affected me that much because I have the same friends I had in high school. I got the same wife. I'm driving the same car. I'm pretty consistent. But I would see other people who it would devastate them to think that somebody didn't like them. So, I mean, I'm not thrilled if they don't, and I certainly would try to win them over, but I wouldn't kill myself trying to do it.
Is criticism hard for Jay Leno?
No. Please. Well, you know what's so funny? That's why I do The Road, because when I was hosting The Tonight Show, the vitriolic hate people would just hate you for, you know, phony star. Oh, you took this, Letterman had the show and you stole it. No, you know, Dave never had The Tonight Show. Ever. I mean, I think Johnny would have wanted Dave to do it. I think that was true. But Dave was a huge success at 12:30. Johnny was a huge success at 11:30. Their goal, the network, was to find somebody who could replicate Johnny's success and keep Dave. Because if they moved Dave down to 11:30, then they got a hole at 12:30.
Right, they have a winner at 11:30 already.
They got to start all over again. So it was never even in the cards. I mean, I think Dave kind of expected it, and it wouldn't have been surprised if he did. But it didn't have, and people think I swooped in and took the show. I guest hosted for 5 years. I was a permanent guest host.
So that whole period, which the late shift, that book was written, and there was a documentary, but like, and then going into the Conan and the Coden thing, how much of that do we all have wrong?
Oh, it's all wrong. Well, the Conan one, for example. I was host of The Tonight Show. Zucker came to me one day and said, Conan's people want you out. I go, what are you talking about? I promote a show every night. Well, they think he should have the show, and they've got the clout to do it. I said, well, guys, I signed a pay-and-play contract, which means you had to use me. You know, the worst thing you can do in Hollywood, some comics say, hey, they signed me to this deal. They got to pay me, and they're not using me, so I get to keep the money. That's right, and that's the only money he will ever have because they paid you not to be on. You realize they made a mistake. You know. Wow. So my contract was always, if you use me, you got to put me on. So I had 5 years left to go, and they go, well, you have to retire after 5 years. And I didn't have a manager. I didn't have an agent. And I said, all right, is that what you want?
Hold on a second. You're on The Tonight Show.
Well, that's my favorite line. I said, you know, I've been number one now for like 9 years, whatever it was. And I remember when the executive said, well, we want what's above number one. Okay, all right. What? And I laughed. I said, what's above number one? And everybody kind of laughed. And the guy realized how stupid it sounded. I said, guys, you want me? Look, I said, I don't want to die by 1,000 paper cuts, okay? You want me out, I'll step down. I'll say I'm retiring, okay? It's a good run. I did it for however many years it was, up from 92 to 14, to 9, rather. I said, okay, Some men thou chase leave. Okay, then, and I was doing great, and Conan was doing great, and I continued to promote him. I wasn't thrilled, but that's okay. Okay, then Craig Ferguson comes along and goes opposite Conan and wins a Peabody Award, and people really like him, and then he's kind of edging in on Conan's territory. I'm not sure if he beat Conan. I think he did a number of times. Anyway, he began, and then the network got nervous, and they go, I get that call, you know. Listen, we think we made a mistake. I go, guys, you already kicked me out of here. I said, what do you want to do? I said, we'll put you on at 10 o'clock. I said, you know, 10 o'clock doesn't work. And they said, look, I'll tell you what. Because Law and Order was costing them a fortune and all these other late night shows. And they wanted to go with a cheaper show at 10 o'clock. And talk shows compared to, you know, big productions are cheaper to do. And they said, well, I'll tell you what. We'll pay your staff for 2 years, regardless of how long it stays on, if you agree to do it. I said, okay, I don't really want to do the Jay Leno show. I like it. Did I ever tell you a story why the Tonight Show was... Backtrack. When I got Tonight Show, it was the Tonight Show starring Jay Leno. And my mother would call, oh, gee, starring Jay Leno. Gee, it sounds like you missed a big shot, starring Jay Leno. I go, Ma, that's... Every time she watched, she go, oh, starring Jay Leno, oh, Mr. Big Shot, listen to him, Mr. Who's it? So I said, okay, fine. So I changed the Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Your mom caused the name of the show to be changed.
It's Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Yeah, very stupid. Okay, so anyway.
But wasn't it the Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson?
Yes, starring Johnny
Carson. But that was okay.
That was okay.
Mom was fine with that.
That was Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah, right, of course.
So then let's see. Look, okay, so let's get back. Okay. So then I go on at 10 o'clock, and because the 11 o'clock news around the country has a lot of influence, they didn't want the headlines and some of the comedy segments to be at the top of the show. They wanted it to be the end of the show, so it'd be a stronger lead-in for their 11 o'clock news. Just a nightmare. So it didn't work well. Meanwhile, Conan was not doing particularly well at 11.
So you would go from 10 to 11, then they'd have news, then they'd have another the Tonight Show, another late-night talk show.
No, it wasn't called the Tonight Show. It was the Jay Leno Show.
You're from 10 to 11.
Yeah, right.
But they had news in between.
Well, first of all, I said, Conan will never go for that. And the network said, well, he'd have to. I said, look, the original idea was I would do a half hour from 11:30 to 12, do the monologue and a comedy bit, and then the show would become The Tonight Show with Conan. Well, Conan didn't want this. He said, I quit. So he quit. So then, oh, no, that's when I came back. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm back at 10 o'clock. That's how I came back. Yeah, at the 10 o'clock show. It really was not a success putting a talk show. Talk shows at 10 o'clock didn't work.
Was there
Dick Cavett did, other people did it.
Was there a gap? Conan takes over the Tonight Show. Are you immediately doing this show from 10 to 11?
No, Conan was on for 9 months, I guess.
And there was trouble?
Well, I think Conan is very funny. It wasn't Johnny's, my humor was closer to Johnny's, I think. And some of the I think the network thought some of the skits were too long and, you know, whatever it might be. And they were giving him notes and there were a lot of pushback and, look, we do the show we do. And, you know, the problems that happened. Okay. Anyway, the ratings were not doing well. And us being on at 10 o'clock didn't help his ratings any. Okay. So then they were going to cancel him and then they went to him and said, listen, how about this? We put Jay on for half an hour and that's when we wrote that letter to Earth or whatever it was. And that's where it happened. I mean, but, you know, it was not, you know, I would read in the paper, Leno demanded $150 million, so they had to fire him. Well, I got fired. How could I demand any money? I couldn't demand any money. They asked me to come back. Okay, they're going to, the corner was not doing that well. And that's really what it was. So, but have I spoken to Conan? No. I mean, I would if he wanted, but... You know, I think it's easier just to blame me for everything and go, oh, yeah, well, you make your own success. That's why these shows pay a lot of money, because they want you to make money and get the numbers, okay? And when they give you notes and you don't take them, they have the right to do what they want, you know. But I didn't have, you know, I didn't have any representation.
Why is that?
Well, I was very lucky. I was with ICM at the time, and I'm doing along fine. You know, I'm making, you know, maybe $1 million a year or something. I'm doing stand-up. Okay, it's pretty good. 900, you know, something like that. And they came and said, listen, you know, we don't really feel you're the kind of guy whose name is going to be in the paper every day. And that's what we want, clients whose name are going to be in the paper every day. And I said, well, I'm not really controversial. So we're going to drop you as a client. I go, you're still making
$100,000
a year. I go, yeah, but we have bigger clients. I said, okay, great. So let's terminate. And then, of course, I get the Tonight Show and save myself $30 million.
Why would any agent... I don't have reps right now. I have no agent, no manager.
I rest my case.
Of course, I'm doing this in a Shasta, but yeah, I find myself very confused by the choices they make and
well,
how
that's
they...
That's what I mean. That's why I always kept stand-up in my back pocket. Because TV is, you know, it's a rocky road. You're too relying on other people's successes or failures. When you do stand-up, it's all you. You get all the credit, and you also get all the blame. But you also get all the money. So I didn't have to pay commissions. I didn't have a manager.
You have reps now, right?
No.
So if a corporation wants to book you, what's the process?
They call.
They call you.
Well, I use agents. Look, you get me a job. Yeah, I'll pay you. I'll give you a percentage. Okay.
So you'll work with anybody who brings you something.
Yeah, that's pretty much the
and
way
then
it works.
They get to eat what they kill.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it works.
Yeah. You're smart. That's the way I've been doing it. And
yeah, it works for me. I mean, obviously, if I had had all the machine, I'm sure that the press would have been working overtime to make me the good guy and somebody else the bad guy, you know. I mean, I read all these horrible stories. Oh, I stabbed this guy in the back and I did. No, I didn't. The network didn't want that. It was their choice.
Do you hate... Jay's getting a phone call.
Oh, go ahead. Do
you hate that that's a part of your legacy?
No, it is. Look, I have the same friends I had in high school. Hang on a sec. Oh, hey, I'm just doing a podcast. Can I call you back?
Got Jay Leno on the podcast taking a phone call.
Okay. Oh. What was your question?
Do you hate that entire episode with the Tonight Show and Conan getting the Tonight Show? Everything's so murky and you've got to explain it and
here's my thing.
Opinion
I'm not cheating on my wife. It's not a DUI. It's not a cocaine-fueled rage.
Mm-hmm.
It's just life, and that's the way life is. No matter what job you're in, there's always going to be somebody who's mad or hates you or something. I don't feel I really did anything wrong or because nobody has the facts. No one said, you know, you took Letterman had the show and you came in the next day and you took it. No, he never said. Okay, so you can't defend yourself. Stern would rail on about how I stole all my bits from him and, you know, things like that where you go, well, that's not really true. So I just learned to ignore it, you know. I mean, Howard would rail against me daily. I hate Jay Leno, and I'm going to go on Letterman and beat him. But I don't think he ever beat us when we were against him. And I don't dislike Howard. He's fine. I did his show a lot of times, but it suited him to come after me because that helped his ratings. But it doesn't help my numbers to go after somebody else. I found just by ignoring it and trying to be a gentleman through the whole thing, you just let it go. The people are going to... Believe you. The people don't believe you. And you're not going to change anybody's opinion. It's like meeting people who are Trump and Biden supporters. You're not going to change either one of their minds. Mm. So why do I even bother with this?
But is it hurtful and frustrating?
You know something? I was on fire. I crashed motorcycles. That hurts a lot more, really.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really. No. It would hurt if you really thought you did something untoward and were a terrible person.
Yeah.
But we didn't. But then people hear this and go, Leno's a liar. I know for a fact that, that's all right.
I was doing a radio show on KFI, a local radio station here, AM station. And I was filling in for Tim Conway Jr.
Right.
And you were my first guest. You came in.
Right.
And you were very supportive. You were like a mentor. You would call me afterwards. You'd give me tips. I was probably a horrible interviewer because my adrenaline was going like this and I felt like I had to hit marks and it was such a different format than this. So I really appreciate you giving me a second chance and coming in and doing this. But we got to talking. We were talking on the phone. You told me a couple of stories, which I loved. Here's a fast one that I'd love you to tell. I repeat the story all the time. Okay. It's you had a private gig, I think in Pennsylvania, but Frank Sinatra wanted you to do his show in Chicago. And Frank called you, and you told me you never turned down Frank. Do you remember this story?
Well, I'm trying to think. It sounds a little different. What's the end? I'm trying to.
The end was you said, Frank, I can't do this story, and then Frank called the people you were supposed to work for. Does this ring a bell?
No, that wasn't Frank. That was a representative. Well, it was one of his agents. Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's.
I think it was. It wasn't Frank that called you.
No. I didn't know him that well. You know, it was not... It's so funny because sometimes it's Mrs. Sinatra, sometimes it's Frank, and I could never... It was just hard to read the room. So it wasn't... I much more enjoyed the other talents, Tony Bennett, Dean Martin, Perry Como. I worked with all those guys. They're a lot more laid back. With Sinatra, there's a lot of tension, a lot of people in the room, a lot of... Oh, geez, do I fit in here? Am I... Excuse me, Miss Sinatra. I never knew where I stood, you know, because I always had good relationships with all the people I worked with, but I didn't know him that well. I mean, I think obviously a great guy. I mean, my favorite Sinatra story is he was. This is back in the days when $100 was a lot of money, so he gives the driver. This guy picks him up. He gives him $100. You know, the guy goes, "Oh, thank you." And Sinatra's like, "Oh." Driving along, he says to the kid, "You ever gotten a $100 tip before?" He goes, "Oh yeah." So he gets to where he's going, starts the other car, and gives the kid another $100. "There you go." He goes, "Thank you very much." He says, "Kid, can I ask you a question? Who's the last guy who gave you $100?" He goes, "You were." He gave him $100 like three years earlier.
Smart kid.
Yeah, that was a great story.
Brad Garrett's got some great stories about working with Frank and working with Sammy Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis Jr., I think, was probably the world's greatest entertainer. I mean, he could tell jokes, he could play drums, he could sing.
All with one eye.
That's why, one of the kindest men, you know, if you said, "Hey, oh, Sammy, I like that watch," he'd take it off and he'd just hand it to you.
Wow.
You know, Petit Philippe or whatever it might be. You know, when I work with him, he used to bring his den. He had like 119 pictures. And every gig he'd go to, his people would show up ahead of time, hang 119 pictures in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And bring his lounger chair. And he died at like 63 or 64.
Which felt old at the time,
right? Yeah, at the time. I mean, well, that's about right, you know. Yeah. But now, that's like 10 years ago, and I go, oh, my God.
And it's so different than the way you travel, which is you're alone, you show up. Like, I've done gigs with Howie Mandel. There's nothing in the green room. We fly in, get off a plane, do it, get right back on the plane.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I like. But when you travel alone, just funny stuff. You know, I don't know how to make this a bit. It just made me laugh, the fact that this would not happen. I'm back east. I have a house in Rhode Island, so I go there sometimes.
You should Airbnb that place. It looks nice.
Yeah, that's what you want to do. And so I go to Joe's Pizza. Joe's Pizza. So I'm in town, and I see a new pizza place up. Oh, Salado or something like whatever. Oh, so I go there, and it's a line. This is pretty good. So there's a line. I go up there, and I hear this tap. "Jay, hey, how are you?" "Jay, it's Joe." "What?" "Joe's Pizza." "Hey, Joe, how you doing?" He goes, "What are you doing here? I thought you come to our shop." And I went, oh, you know, I had a coupon. You had a coupon, so I thought, let me try it, you know. You know, and...
This is why you need an agent.
I know. So I said, and he went, "A coupon? Hey, we all agreed not to use coupons. A prick is using coupons. Hey, now I'm in a lie. Now I'm just caught in this lie."
Yeah.
And it just. And I said,
now you got them in trouble.
It just started making me laugh. Yeah. Okay, that wouldn't have happened if I had a guy go get me a pizza.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I love about you is you did a private gig for McDonald's, and they gave you a card for like 100 little hamburgers.
No. They gave me like a whole bunch of Happy Meal coupons.
You used to.
Well, I'm one of those people. You know, when you're a comic, you don't turn down free food. It's just right. It's just because you don't know when you. I remember those kind of gigs. That was the only food you could get. You just live on hors d'oeuvres, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm driving this SLR McLaren Mercedes, you know, the fancy thing with, you know, the gold wing doors that come up, right? So I pull in McDonald's. He goes, yes. I go, hey, give me two of these Happy Meals. She goes, okay, sir, we're only limited to one Happy Meal per customer. I said, well, that's fine. She goes, no, but I know it's you. Uh-huh. So let me get the manager. Well, no, don't get that. No, take the manager. Could you pull over? Okay, so I pull off to the side, you know. So then the manager comes out, right? And when the gold wing doors go, all these kids come around. Oh, what kind of car? Look at that cool car, you know? And the manager goes, no, Mr. Lano, normally our policy is only one Happy Meal per visit. But because it's you and you, I go, no, it's fine. And then I hear somebody go, that's Jay Leno. He's fighting over about a Happy Meal. I said, I'm not fighting. I just had these coupons. I'm not fighting over
it. I think it's so funny that you're using the coupons. Yeah, but I get
it. Why would I not? But see, that's another thing of mine.
But you would never buy a Happy Meal. If you went to McDonald's,
no, I never buy a Happy Meal.
You would buy a Big Mac or something.
I also never wanted to be a comedian who turned down a gig because it's not enough money. You know, it was always that's another thing because I always say, what are you doing on a Tuesday that's worth 10 grand or 20 grand? Really? What are you doing? You know, no, I don't want to. So when you get opportunities, you take them so you don't look like you.
Yeah. Which brings me to, at the beginning, I said I want to talk about two Tonight Show stories. One is my story, right. One is yours. And we were on the phone, maybe I called you, and I asked you for some business advice because I was offered a corporate gig, and I don't have reps, and I have someone that helps me, an assistant. And I said, counter 25% more. And the deal almost went away. They were so offended. They didn't like come back and say, we'll give you just a little bit more. That's the best. They didn't come back and go, hey, that's the best we can do. We love you. We'd really love to have you. If not, we understand. So it almost went away. And I asked you for some advice. And you told me what I think is a story that would be really important for a lot of people to hear and understand, because I think it shows a genius business mind.
Is this about the scale?
Yes. This is about when you were doing the Tonight Show, there were a rotation of three or four different hosts.
No. There were like six different people. I was like the seventh one. They were continuing for rotating hosts. Guest hosts.
Gary Shandling.
Well, I don't name a bunch of them, but everybody was repped by the same firm.
Okay.
And a guy from the firm calls me and says, listen, we'd like you to join us. You know, we're gonna be asking $25,000 a night to host. And I said, you know, I'm getting $512, which is what scale was. I said, well, we'll get you $25,000. I said, you know, I'm fine. Goes, what? Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Because I knew Johnny Carson owned the show. And Johnny's paying out of his pocket. So, assuming they think we're all the same, I didn't think I was better than any of those others or worse. I was in that running. There were seven of us. But everybody else is charging $25,000, and I'm charging $512. And it's the same job.
Right.
So, next thing I know, oh, I'm the permanent guest house. Oh, how'd that happen? Okay, and then the money, you know, if you're any good, showbiz is not like teaching or being a policeman where your only reward is adulation or the admiration of your students. They reward you with money. I don't mean that sarcastically, like being policemen or teachers, but it just is. It's just, if you're any good, you just get more.
Yeah.
And my thing was, well, if I'm any good, I guess they'll pay me more. I never turned down a club date, no matter what it paid, because, I don't know. I'm a huge believer in low self-esteem. It's the key to success. If you don't if you don't think you're the smartest person in the room, you'll shut up and you'll listen. You know, we have friends of us, comedians we know that got shows, and when they get the show, they go, no, I don't like these lights. You know, Bob is an Academy Award winning light director. Yeah, well, he sucks. I don't like these lights. Okay, I let people do their job. I do my job. Like when I hired writers, I picked them up for a year at a time, not 13 weeks. Now, like on Saturday Night Live, they love that competitive, you're in, you're out, you know.
Right.
I just want to, guys, take a long time, write down everything, even if it's not funny, just write the idea down. I'll read it. Maybe I can make a joke or somebody else can do it, and so consequently, I had the same group for 22 years, and we all did good. You know, people find their own voice, but
So your philosophy was if your pay was less than the other guest hosts, they would use you more often.
Which they did.
Right.
Smart. I mean, you're saving hundreds of thousands of dollars a month.
But aren't you thinking they're getting 25, I should get 25, I should use the 25,
but to me,
this might be the last time I work, what if I suck at this?
But to me, the money was in the live performing because, oh, you're the guy in the Tonight Show. I mean, once...
It's very forward thinking.
Well, it worked great. I mean,
yeah, it could have not worked great too.
Yeah, but it still would have, you know, how much pie can you eat? You know, at some point, you know... Oh, we've told the story a million times. But when I was doing The Tonight Show, ratings were starting to fall. We're still number one, but all of TV was down because intrusion of cable and so on. And they said, we got to cut, we got to get rid of some of the crew in The Tonight Show. And I said, you know, at the time I was making $30 million a year. I said, you know, I spoke to my wife. It's just the two of us. We think we can live on $15 million a year.
Can you?
We're going to try and tighten
up. You got to cut back.
Just being a,
well, you got the coupons from McDonald's.
That's
all right.
That's, you're doing okay. But that's right. But that was my, my thing. Because how much pie can you eat? So by taking a 50% pay cut, everybody kept their job. I had the most loyal, great union crew. We did a union shop. Everybody made money. You know, I mean, it was great. I love that job, you know. Everybody I hired, for the most part, had never done it before, except for a few. So they all intermarried because they're together all the time. You can't do that anymore on a show.
Right.
And we had 64 children born in the 22 years that I was on The Tonight Show. Yeah. And the kids, you know, when I left the show, some were 17, 18, some were babies, some were grandkids. It was really kind of cool. It was really, we had them all on near the end there. They all came out. All the kids born on the show.
It's amazing.
Yeah, did
you ever want to have kids?
I'm not. You know, if my wife didn't want to have kids, that's fine. Whatever. To me, it's the woman's decision. You know, it's their choice. It's their body. If they want to, that's fine. If not, whatever, you know. I mean, it didn't. I mean, I enjoyed it because it was like my wife. We could date all. Hey, I got to go to Hawaii. You want to come? So it was perfect. It was like a vacation. And, you know, somebody else is paying for it.
Yeah.
And they get to travel and see things and, you know.
Any sense of legacy? Like, I don't have kids, so I'm curious, you know.
No,
you...
no sense of, there's no such thing as a legacy. It just makes me laugh. No, everybody thinks that, oh, they're going to be remembered. No, you're not. No, you're not.
I got to take you in my garage after this. I have an entire storage section of Orny Adams memorabilia for the Orny Adams Museum that's never opening. But I thought when I started collecting this stuff, going back to when I'm working Giggles and Saugus Nick's and my pictures on the marquee for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you're the only one that's interested in it.
I'm not even interested in it anymore. You know, I'm not.
I always think of the Christmas Carol, you know. I'll go to Scrooge's funeral, but I must be fed. There must be food at the funeral, you know. The greatest book ever written, by the way. Christmas Carol. Because it's the first popular book. Where to get into heaven, you got into it on earth. You didn't have to die. You know, people from that era, this life is awful, but the next one's going to be great. That was the promise.
Yeah.
But with the Christmas Carol, if Scrooge just changed his life and changed his attitude, he could be in heaven on earth. He could have, you know, kids, little kids would follow him and look up to him, and he could be a big shot and help people out. And it's the greatest story. It's the simplest story. But you didn't have to die. You didn't have to beat yourself or flog yourself. There was no self-flagellation kind of thing going on. It was just, if you just led a decent life and treated people nicely.
That's the reward.
That's it. And you see the great reward. You know, Alistair Sims is the best version, 1952. He was the best Scrooge. That was a really cheap black and white one.
Yeah. Remember that movie with George Burns, Oh God?
I do remember it, but not, I remember it a little bit. I mean, I knew George Burns. I got to talk with him a couple of times. He's a great guy. I remember the movie, but it didn't really have an impact on me. I just thought it was a good, fun movie.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Somehow my head went there.
I've
got to tell you my Tonight Show story.
Go ahead.
Which involves you.
Yes.
And how I got on the Tonight Show. which I don't know if I've told this story publicly before, and it's one of those, if I had reps, they'd tell me probably not to tell the story. But I had submitted for The Tonight Show several times. My manager at the time was George Shapiro.
Oh, George, yeah.
And he repped several big guys, yes. Carl Reiner. And,
oh, yeah, George is great. Yeah, yeah.
And Seinfeld. And he tried to get me on the show, and he couldn't get me on your show. And
you mean when I did it?
Or yeah,
when,
oh, you yeah. Were, yeah, I was. That's the only time I did it. Or that was right. That was the era. You know, when I mean, it just blows my mind you're even up here. I mean, when I was in Brookline, Massachusetts, and I was starting out and doing comedy, and I was temping, and then I would temp, and I'd make, $60 a day temping, and then all of a sudden, I was doing comedy, and they'd send me to New Hampshire, Portsmouth, and pay me $75, $125 right. to get on stage and do what I love, right, and now right. I'm making more money doing what I love
right, right.
than temping. So I got rid of temping, but I was living in Brookline, Massachusetts, on High Street, and I had a fax machine, and I'd submit jokes to your show.
Right.
I can't remember how I got connected, but I got connected, and you ended up using a couple of jokes, which is just blows my mind to this day. But George Shapiro couldn't get me on The Tonight Show. I ended up leaving George, and then I was working with this agency. I'm not going to say which one. And they, from what I was told, I put together a tape at the Comedy and Magic Club, and it was submitted, and I was turned down. And I brought that, it was a DVD.
Right.
And I brought it to Shandling's house, Gary Shandling. I said, Gary, I'm just discouraged. I put this together, this set for The Tonight Show, and I've been turned down. He said, let me watch it. And we put it in. And the first thing was the DVD. Remember DVD menus?
Right, right.
I made a menu, and right. Fortunate Son from CCR
right.
just starts playing.
Right.
And Gary goes, stop. Get rid of the music.
Right.
The first thing he said, right? So we play the set. It's a 5-minute set from the Comedy Magic Club. And Gary said, that's as good as any set I've ever seen on The Tonight Show.
Right.
He said, get it to Leno.
Yeah.
So I called the Comedy Magic Club. You perform there every Sunday. And I spoke to Rich, who is a manager, and perhaps Mike Lacey. And I said, hey, if I bring down a package for Jay Leno, would you give it to him? And they surprisingly said yes. I was actually shocked.
Right.
So I left on a Sunday this DVD without CCR playing
right.
for you. And my parents were in town. And Monday night, phone rings. It's a blocked call. And it was you. And the first thing you told me was that my DVD broke your DVD player. Oh. That it got stuck in there, right? And you said, I don't remember your words, but you loved the set, and you said, I'm going to put you on my show this Friday, as in 4 days.
Right, right.
That's how I got The Tonight Show.
Oh, okay.
Well, I didn't get The Tonight
Show. That's the best way to get it. Yeah.
I didn't get it through reps, managers, right. Everybody right. else tried to get it. Well, I got it to you.
I always said, comedians will always get more work from other comedians than you'll ever get from an agent or a manager. Because as a comedian, you can't do every gig every day. So there's no harm in promoting somebody else because you're just making the business more popular. The more good comedians you have, the more people go. People, you know, times I've talked to people go, I don't go to comedy clubs anymore. It's all filthy. I can't stand it. Okay, that hurts the whole industry. So so you're not competing for the number one record or anything. You know, so you can't do every gig every day. So Steve Martin was very helpful to me. So many comedians helped me.
Yeah.
Robert Klein.
And by the way, in defense of your show, I don't know if my reps, my agents actually got that DVD or that set to them, but...
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I would have, but you did it the right way. Just get it to the person. You know, that's what I always tell, you know, I have people who say to me, I want to be a writer. My advice is write whoever you like in show business, write them a letter why you like them. Because people like to help other people.
You think?
Yes. Like this one kid told me, he said, I think Steven Spielberg is great. I said, write him a letter, you know, just heartfelt. And he got a job. He became an intern.
And yeah.
Got to work there. Yeah.
Steve Martin, I think is a remarkable
talent. Yeah,
that was one of two albums my parents had was Steve Martin with the white suit and doing King Tut.
Yeah,
we're talking about an album of audio, you know, vinyl, and they had I think a George Burns album that I love. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. George
Carlin.
Carlin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oof. Blanking on one of the best.
That's a big leap.
And the rub on you in Boston was always that you were just a monster comedian. Just a monster. I mean...
I mean, it was... I enjoyed it. It was fun. But I realized... The trouble is when you get famous in Boston, you got to get out of there. Mm. There's so many great comedians in Boston. Lenny Clark, Steve Sweeney. But a lot of guys had a Boston-based act. Talking about Mayor White, you know. Then you go to Hartford and people go, who's Mayor White? What? Yeah. What do you mean? What? You know, what was that? Buzzy's Roast Beef and just all the local landmarks. But now you have a act that only works in Boston.
Right.
You know? I always tell Kim, when you get popular somewhere, get out and go to the next place. You
know? Right. What means, to me, Steve Martin is magical.
Yeah, wonderful comedian.
Just something.
And when you think about it, totally clean.
Right.
Very funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you think so many comedians, as they get older, become bitter, jaded, cynical? Jerry Lewis comes to mind.
Well, I think, why don't you just make it, why do people in general get bitter? I mean, comedians are just a reflection of what actual life is. I mean, we all know people like that, don't we? I mean, women that were like beautiful knockouts and then they get to be middle-aged and suddenly men aren't tripping over themselves anymore and they feel insulted.
Yeah.
Or same thing with men, you know, whatever it might be. I don't think it's...
That's Jay Leno's helicopter coming to pick him up.
That's what I'm trying to get me out of here.
Yeah.
It really is. That's where the low self-esteem is a tremendous help because you go out and people laugh and go, oh, I guess I'm not as bad as I thought I was, as opposed to, I'm a lot better than these people thinking. You know what I'm saying?
Do you have low self-esteem now?
Yeah, it's the key to success, I think it is. Because I always think I'm not the smartest person in the room. I better prepare. Like here, I didn't know where you live, but I came here last night.
You did,
parked my car to see where I could be so I wouldn't be late. And it all reflects on you. I mean, if I had showed up an hour and a half late, I'm sorry, I overslept, man. Well, it's a little disrespectful, and it's like, you knew he's 8 to 10. What's he doing here at 11:30? You know. I mean,
you're a pro.
It's all. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of being professional. You know, it's that old Dale Carnegie stuff. Shake them hand, look them in the eye. You know, there are plenty of people I disagree with, politically and everything else, but I like them as people because they're professional.
Mm.
It's very simple, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times, a lot of comics I love, but I can't recommend them. You know, there was one comedian, we're not going to say who it is, but this corporate, I want to use this person. I said, you know, and I started to say, well, I don't think, oh, he goes, no, we're a very hip young company. We really, okay, but what you think is hip is different than what comedians think is hip,
right.
You know? And the comic was so blue, and the guy called me, goes, I said, I told you not to hire them. I said, but they hired him anyway. So that's what it is.
Yeah. I see you doing a lot of podcasts now. Do you, and I think you're a private guy. What is motivating you?
Well, I like,
why are you
I like to
right
help
now?
Comics.
Yeah.
I mean, we're friends, and I'm we're playing to order.
There's a lot of planes today.
It's like it's Pearl Harbor Day.
This is unusual, the amount of sounds that we're getting on this podcast today.
Again, who am I to turn down a job? It's just, I respect the word job, okay? It's a paying gig. We live in an economy now where so many people are struggling, can't, I'm fortunate. Why would I turn down a job?
But doing this today, you're helping me a lot.
Well, okay, I hope so. Well, that's great. I mean, that's the idea. I mean, I think most of the value on this earth is from helping other people. I mean, it seems like, because as a comedian, we do this, look, we would both do it for free. The fact that it pays tremendous amounts of money, that's great.
Not my podcast.
Yeah.
But, am I supposed to pay you?
I thought we, I'm sorry. No, but you know.
I'll give you 500, how much was it? 578? What was scale when you were doing the Tonight Show?
512.
Yeah. I'll match that. 512, not 515?
Well, you know, I did do one podcast, and it was not a professional. Someone who was successful, and they said, can we do my podcast? I said, yeah, no problem. What is it? He goes, $25,000, okay. I said, what? Yeah, don't worry about it. I don't know why they paid that. I don't think they ever paid that again. It just made me laugh. I said,
oh, I'd like to do that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to get paid. It's very different than when you were hosting The Tonight Show, right? This is a long-form conversation. It's almost the way television was in the past, correct? It was longer conversations. You used to sit around smoking. Remember the old Tonight Show?
When television came out, it was much more intellectual in the early days. You had Playhouse 90, and Noel Coward had a show, and because only rich people had TVs.
Hmm.
And then once it became mass, then the whole thing sort of changed.
Did you ever have a guest on The Tonight Show that asked you to pull part of the interview for whatever reason?
Yeah, all the time.
Really?
Sure.
Did you enjoy The Tonight Show? Was it stressful?
No,
I don't think you get stressed,
stressful,
do you?
No, I loved it. I thought, you know, the great thing about it was I could be in show business without being in show business. Mm-hmm. By that I mean, like, I love Charlie Sheen. Charlie's a friend of mine, but I don't want to be Charlie Sheen. Mm-hmm. But being around Charlie and joking about him, you know, hookers pushing his Mercedes off a cliff and Mulholland Drive, it's all those kind of stories. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story about Charlie Sheen. I'm waiting for Charlie, got him booked on the show. About 3:30, Jay, we taped it like 4:30. Jay, it's Charlie, what's up? Listen, man, had an accident, a limo caught fire. What happened? You okay? Yeah, I'm okay, man. Look, we'll get a comic. I think we got Rob Schneider. Whatever. We'll get somebody. Don't worry about it. Take care of us. Okay, man. Thanks. I appreciate it. I said, Charlie got in an accident. Oh, Jesus, terrible. I don't hear anything else, you know. I said, anything on the Entertainment Tonight or news about Charlie? I said, give me Bob the chauffeur and Bob, Jay Leno. Hey, what's up? Where are you at? I'm sitting in front of Charlie's house. You're not on fire? No, he hadn't come out. I go, really? It's like a kid with a monster under. There's a monster under the bed. Yeah. You really didn't think a limo being T-boned on the 101 and catching fire with an A-list movie star and it would make the paper? I go, Charlie, what are you doing? Oh, man, I'm screwed up. All right, don't worry. I'm fine. Just tell me that. Don't tell me the limo crash. I mean, it just made me laugh. So I could be in and around that, you know?
I think you're like me. Like, I feel a little bit like an outsider.
Yeah, that's why you're successful. You have to be an outsider. You know, I felt when I was at I stopped going to the Comedy Store because, as funny as I thought Sam Kinison was, not a good person. Too much coke, carried guns, and he'd come in with his entourage, and they would have guns and coke, and he'd be doing it on the table. And I said to Mitch, I said, you know, I don't want to be here when this gets raided. Because I'm sure I'll have cocaine residue on me. I'll be arrested. I'm here to work. I'm a comedian. I want to come in, do my show, and go home. Okay? I don't want to hang. So I never went to the Comedy Store again. It turned me off. And so with The Tonight Show, I was protected. I could be around all of that.
Right.
Without it costing me an arm and a leg.
You were never into that stuff. The drugs, the alcohol, scene.
No, I never had an interest in it. Yeah. It's not, I got nothing against it. It's fine. It's like gambling. You know, I could take $1,000 and lose $1,000, or I could talk for 20 minutes and get $1,000. I think I'll talk. I'm being dyslexic, being a gambler. I'd be in Vegas. Sir, you have 28. You have 28, sir. Oh, it's 21. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I've always been curious, and maybe you'll be able to answer this. Like, fame, does it do something to a person, or are they predisposed to that?
No, it's high school with money, and that's what's fun about it. It's the fact that everywhere you go, people know you or think they know you, and they treat you as if they know you, which is very funny. It just makes me laugh, you know. When I would talk about it before I was well known, like when I could say, I go into Home Depot and the electrical department. Oh, Miss Lano, can I help you? Oh yeah, Bob. It just sort of makes me laugh. I used to love the Jack Benny show because Jack Benny was a normal guy. He lived a normal life. Or even Danny Thomas. You remember the Danny Thomas show? Mm-hmm. Danny Thomas had a wife and a family, and he would go to the club every night to work because that's where he worked, at the club. Right. And he would sing, and Sid Halper was his agent. I thought, well, that's a life to have. Lead a normal life, but make show business money. Well, that's the greatest thing. When you can lead a normal life and make show business money, most people make show business money and then lead a show business life.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you wish you weren't as recognizable?
Wish I weren't?
Yeah. Do you wish you could just go back to being Jay Leno from Lawrence?
But don't you find that's the great thing about being a comedian? You know, I saw that with Bob Hope. People go, Mr. Sinatra, oh, Mr. Bennett, nice to meet you. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Because as a comic, there's a familiarity there. Yeah. People come up to you. No, I like it because when people come up to me, they ask me about real life. They go, Jay, you know cars, right? Okay, I got a 65 Pontiac. It's got the overhead cam 6. Oh, okay. And I can talk to them for 20 minutes. You know, I remember I having Clooney on The Tonight Show and people saying to him, oh, George, come here. Can you take a look at this scar? I'm not a doctor. No, but you know about scars and stuff because you're on the show. You know, I'm not a real doctor. Yeah, but you just take a look. You know, I don't get that. I would get people, they'd watch my car. I always played myself on TV. Hmm. So I was never a character where my real life was different from a show. So when people come up to me, it's always something I actually have an interest in or do. So I enjoy talking to them.
That's
you
great.
Know, you don't feel like a phony, like, you know, I really think I'm a lawyer because I'm on a TV show. You know?
Yeah. Do you, when I did The Tonight Show, I have just one more question, and then we're going to play this game show and we get you out of here. You know, I was just distracted. I've got to get this replaced. How would you do this?
You'll get what replaced?
I got the vinyl is wearing down, the cushions suck. So
okay,
if you had
to, that's like a 5-minute job. Okay. You go to an upholsterer.
Okay.
You put new foam in this and sew it up. Thank you.
But I need this, like, you can't see it, but yeah, like, see, like, it's like ripping and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know how it's put together? It's sewed together.
So they're going to, but they just need to replace this whole thing, don't they?
No, they can just fix it.
They can fix this?
Why replace it?
Okay, yeah. I don't know. That's Jay, I do.
I do this every day when I get old.
Well, I'm going to give these to you to get. You're going to take these home.
An upholsterer can fix that for you, no problem.
You know, I had to replace my windshield wipers on my car for the first time. I had to go on YouTube and watch videos on how to do that. I have two more thoughts, and we're going to play this game quickly and get you out of here. First of all, when I was on The Tonight Show, I brought my parents, who will be thrilled that I'm talking to you today. They'll be blown away that you're at my house. It's crazy.
They're both still alive?
Still alive.
Oh, that's great.
My dad is from Andover, where you're from.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you guys talked about it. Not that you would ever remember, but you talked about it in great length.
How old is your dad?
He's 82.
So he's like 8 years older than me. Okay.
Yeah, he grew up in Andover, Massachusetts. His dad had a store in Lowell. Lawrence. Yeah. So I feel even more connected to you. But you could not have been, they came to, when I did Letterman, but you they were backstage. You spent more time talking to them. They're such fans. They've met a lot of people through me, and they bring you up all the time. They ask questions.
Well, give them my best.
Yeah, they really adore you.
That's funny.
Can you help non-comedians understand the drive of comedians to still do stand-up comedy, even like you, when they don't have to?
Well, it's kind of like golf. You can do it till you're 80 if you play it right.
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody that's ambitious, if you sell insurance or you're an engineer or any of that, anybody that has an interest in things, it just, you know, I can't imagine having a job I hated.
Yeah, but insurance people, if they didn't have to sell insurance, wouldn't sell insurance. Comics love doing stand-up comedy. If you're a true comic, you are, that's why this gives me such great pleasure to talk to you. You're a true comic.
Well, so are you. That's what I mean. You have to do it. You would do it anyway if it didn't. The saddest thing is when you see guys that aren't funny at all doing it. Oh, God, they just read the room wrong, and they just don't have the ear. You know, they say something inappropriate. It's like, you know.
Don't you think there's a lot of bad comedy out there?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of bad comedy out there, but it's not my place to comment on it. Because, you know, whenever I watch comedians, I don't get it. I say to them, okay, Am I the old guy now from a different generation? Am I jealous of this person, or is it really not funny? Hmm. Sometimes it's a little tricky for me because I go, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm, because it's not what I do, I don't want to condemn it, so I just try not to have an opinion.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I'll discuss it with other comics, but
yeah.
For the most part, I go, I don't quite get that.
Yeah. So when you came up here, and I want to thank you, my guest is Jay Leno, which blows my mind. You came up here, I don't like to disclose where I live, but I live in an area, and you said, aren't there accidents up here? And I said, as a matter of fact, there was an accident the other night.
You live on a windy road.
Yeah. And there was I heard it, and I'm like, that was an accident. I got up, I looked, and I saw up the street about 100 yards, I saw a light, a car light. And I couldn't, you know, you're tired. I'm like, was that an accident? Am I imagining this? The next day I go out for a walk and it looks like somebody hit a wall and there are parts of the car right there.
Right. Yeah, that would be an accident.
That would be an accident. Yeah. So I thought, what if I brought the parts and Jay Leno had to tell me what kind of car this was? And this is Crash. This is the premiere of Crash Test Lenny or Leno.
All right, where's the person?
So here, do you want me to give you all the... No, it could be one car, could be two cars.
Well, let me see
could be a
got.
Motorcycle. Do you want all of it at once?
Yeah, all right. Let's see what you got. Because that will end it sooner.
Yeah. Hey, that's not very nice.
These are the parts you found.
These are the parts I found. And there's one that, to me, is very interesting. Jay Leno right now is playing Crash Test Leno. What is that?
Well, this is like a rectifier. This is not off any modern car.
It isn't? Look at the back. No. But it has like a chip in there.
Yeah, I know. No, these are cooling fins on the top. This possibly a motorcycle part. What else we got here? We got...
It's very heavy.
It's a trim. Well, it's hard to tell. Okay, this is...
Is this identifiable as a car logo?
Okay, what do you got there? I'm not sure what that one is. Well, this is... Okay, I don't know any modern cars that have plastic windows. So I'm not sure what that's off of.
Does this feel like a motorcycle to you?
It might be a... Early motorcycle. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this, you can't really tell a
you
whole lot.
You can't tell a whole lot. What are these? Yeah. I've never seen this come off of a car before.
Oh, okay. These are bearings. Are these seal bearings?
Yeah, there's... Careful, because they're a little greasy.
That's all right.
Jay Leno, not afraid of grease. We're playing Crash Test Leno here. This is not going as I thought it would go.
Well, yeah, there are bearings inside this, so... You know, you've got there's probably been hundreds of accidents on this street. So you've got things from a lot of different cars here.
So you can't tell, like, what part of the car does this come from?
I don't know. You know, there's 10,000 parts in every car, so it's hard to.
Oh.
But like this big plastic windshield, I don't.
It's got to be a motorcycle, right?
A little big for a motorcycle.
It is?
Yeah, it might be
a sidecar. I don't understand what the... How does this... Unless it's a major accident, are these parts being...
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. This is off something else.
All right, so this didn't go very well.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, Jay, I want to thank you for coming up
here. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I mean, I think you're amazing. I have such respect for you.
That was an hour and a half. That went pretty quick.
Yeah. Well... Thank you for coming up.
Thanks.
Hold on. Let me play the theme. Sit here right here while I play the theme. Thank you for listening to What's Wrong with Ornie Adams. I want to thank my guest, Jay Leno. If you want to book Jay, what do we give out? Your cell phone number? How does that work?
I'm fine.
You're fine. You're doing all right.
Yeah, I got
Jay, very supportive. I want to thank Eric Stoltz, who masters the audio for this podcast. I want to thank everyone that listens.
Eric Stoltz?
Eric Stoltz, not the actor, no.
Oh.
But
Eric Stoltz can there be?
There's two, the actor and then the one that...
I remember George Miller. Remember him, the comedian?
Yeah, of course.
He's a funny joke about... he's watching Wild Kingdom with his mother. And it says, producer, Wolfgang Baer. And it says, director, Wolfgang Baer. And his mother goes, I wonder if it's the same Wolfgang Baer.
That's great.
That's the same thing. Eric Stoltz. It can't be that many Eric Stoltz.
No, there aren't. I want to thank you guys, the listeners, everyone who likes and subscribes. This will be on my Patreon first. Then it is on YouTube, where all the podcasts end up. The audio is on Spotify, Apple. Jay, where do you listen to my podcast? In your car?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That'd be it. Yeah.
Are you into technology at all? Is well, your house, I mean, it's smart house.
It's mostly automotive technology.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to watch or listen to too much stuff. You just don't, as a comedian, I don't want to be influenced too much. You know, it's like when you hear a comedian do a great joke, you have to fight not to do your version of that joke.
Hmm.
You know, and I do that. I don't like when people take material from other comics. No. You know, when I started, what I would do, I remember George Carlin's Class Clown album would come out, and I he's talking about stuff that happened in school. So I would do his act in the car, and then at the end, I would throw my own experiences in school. So I remember once one of my first gigs, I got to the gig, I'm standing backstage, I'm doing George, I'm trying to time it to when the guy goes, please welcome Jane.
Yeah.
So I did George, and then I went and said, you know, when I was in school, and then I did my version of it, and it worked. Yeah. It worked. I didn't want to take George's joke, obviously.
Right.
But it helped me lead into it.
I think a lot of young comics do that.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Hey, if you want to keep in touch, the email is whatswrong@ornyadams.com. My tour schedule is at ornyadams.com/tour. Where am I going to be next week, Jay? I'll be at the Halifax Comedy Festival playing the Spats Theater. Then I'm going to Ottawa, Canada.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. And then I'm back in Vegas at the end of the month.
Yeah, any gigs in the United States, possibly.
I can't get booked in this country. Yeah, no, I don't have reps. Yeah. I don't have reps. Thank you, Jay Leno.
Thanks,
and I think we can agree that Crash Test Leno is a fail. It's a pass.
Yeah, I have no pass. I know.
We'll see you for episode 113. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, thanks.